Hey, what's up, everyone? Glad you're here. Feel free to snap photos. That's cool. So I'd like to just chat a little bit about what we did to actually bring about an open source program at my place of employment, which is MasterCard. So just show of hands, how many folks here have an open source program of some sort at their place of employment? Cool. How many folks have like an open source program office? Like it's somebody's job day in and day out to work in the open source world. Okay, cool. Good. We're making progress. How about folks who have none of that and want that? All right, this is for you guys. You guys are my champions. Cool. So really quick, just an introduction, a little bit about me at work. For MasterCard, I'm a principal engineer. I'm responsible for our cloud discipline. I actually grew up in the internet and web space, answering the pager at 3 a.m. when websites stopped working. I'm also a big proponent for open source software, which is what we're here to talk about and how we actually took that passion, myself and a couple other guys, and created a program. Aside from that, in the evenings, I guess I would say, I am a member of the ASF, VP Fundraising. I've been on the HTTPD PMC for quite some time. And I also love open source so much that I developed an open source curriculum to teach an open source class. So if anybody here likes open source at all, raise your hand. All right, keep them up because everybody who raised their hand should also teach an open source class. I did the hard part. Okay, I built the curriculum. That is the hard part. You just have to have the passion, and you now have a way to do this. So I have a link to that at the end of my slides. And you can find me there, theurgeriat@apache.org. So I want to start really quick, talk a little bit about MasterCard, because it's really relevant for this conversation. We've been around a while, right? We started in 1966 as a consortium of like member banks. So think of the types of industries we came from, right? Very militaristic, disciplined, regimented styles, right? We grew organically over the years, just partnerships, and we even got into the EU, well, before it was the EU, just through organic partnerships. Still operated through like member banks, financial institutions. In 2006, we went public, but still had very much of that culture that we were kind of just talking about. What's really interesting and what actually made this entire thing possible is around 2010, we got a new CEO, and he said, "You know, we're not a bank. You guys know that, right?" And we're not. We aren't. It's true. He said, we've actually been doing technology since the 60s, like before digital was cool. So let's quit acting like a bank and let's be a technology company that just so happens to be in the finance industry. So that kind of changed how we were looking at stuff, right? It wasn't so much anymore about, you know, again, member banks. We existed to serve those banks. It was almost like a 501c6. It wasn't. It was a non-for-profit, but it wasn't a c6. Very similar kind of layout. So let's take some of that history and look at what else was going on in the world. So in, what, 78, BSD got released? I mean, MasterCard was already 10 years old at that time. So this open source thing kind of came along a little bit weird. In fact, it wasn't until the X Window Consortium, right, where you actually saw open source with business as a focus, where you had multiple players kind of getting together and not wanting to compete on the boring stuff. They wanted to compete on differentiators. And that didn't happen until late 80s. So, you know, as you can imagine, a company growing up in the late 60s is kind of watching this, hearing the Free Software Foundation and some of the rhetoric, thinking, while this open source thing's kind of, I don't know, communist, socialist looking, it's really weird. In fact, it wasn't even until the 90s, late 90s, that foundations really came on the scene and gave these projects homes outside of just, you know, these weird kind of, I'd almost say, garage basement type origins, right? So when you take some of that history, you take the fact that we as a company, MasterCard, came from a very regimented industry, and you see some of this strange stuff happening in the open source world, strange by all intents and purposes to a business person, and you will actually have an executive that will say something along the lines of, real enterprises do not use open source software. And that's actually where we were. Someone did say that, and they truly believed it. They didn't know at the time we had already been running the Apache web server in our walls for like 10 years, but whatever. No, please don't take a picture of that.
Somebody at MasterCard said that?
Yes. But we're going to change that, okay? We now say we heart open source. And we do. So what the hell happened? What changed? That's what I want to talk to you guys about today. That's what I want to go through. I want to give you basically I want to share the path that we took. So for you who want to stand up a program in your own company, might be able to take that as, hey, this is a plan. I'm going to tweak it. I'm going to add this. I'm going to subtract that. And I'm going to try this in my own place of employment. That's what I'd like to do here today. So if we're good with that, I want to talk about how we did it. So I used a word a little bit earlier. Hands again, who wants to do this in their company? Right? Don't be shy. Those who raise their hands, you need to be the champion. You need to be the person that can make this happen. And in our case, you know, it wasn't necessarily hard, but it was definitely a long process. There was a lot to work through. So as a champion, be ready for the long haul. Be ready to work through all of the different potential red tape processes, whatever it may be. Now, what's really important, and I call this out on the slide, as a champion, you're already here at ApacheCon. I assume you've done some other reading about open source software, maybe licensing and stuff like that. Know your stuff cold, because you are the voice of this movement within your company. So if that doesn't sound like fun, it may not be, but this is for a good thing. Another important part is, you know, you need to know your own company too, right? I talk about in here some of the things that work for us. Not all of it will work for you. There may be some things that I don't have to worry about that you do have to worry about. So know your company well enough. Know what the barriers are going to be. Know what you're going to trip on. Know what weird FUD is already out there that you may need to answer. We actually had a person, not a person in any place of authority, but he assumed that if we ran Open LDAP, because it's GPL licensed, we had to release all of our source code to the world. Crazy, right? But know what those things are going to be. In each of the slides, I also throw a little pro tip in here. Pro tip that really worked out for us, have more than one champion. You know, I'm a principal engineer, so I'm busy as hell. The other two people are just as busy. But Chris Kampmeyer and Scott Anderson, two colleagues of mine, when I'm busy, they'd pick up the slack. When they're busy, I'd pick up the slack. That's a really important thing. So the first step, identify who your champion's going to be. And it's going to be you. You already raised your hand. You committed, whether you knew it or not. And then the next step is going to be forming a bootstrap team, a team of stakeholders. Now, really quick, one of the things that I want to point out, when you're doing this, don't ask the question, may we please start an open source program? What actually worked really well for us was we approached this, we approached it as a statement and said, hey guys, we're going to start an open source program because that's what technology companies do and that's what our engineers want to do. What do you need to see out of me in order for this to be successful? So don't start it as a question. Start it as, hey, we're going to go down this road. What guardrails do you need up there? So one of the things that I tell people, who should be on your bootstrap team? is any person that if somebody later on says, hey, did you get Merle's opinion on doing this? And you say no and you feel a little embarrassed, you should be on your bootstrap team, right? Another really important one, this is courtesy of my mother. You have two ears and one mouth. Does anyone know why? Come on. You should listen twice as much as you talk. That's right. This bootstrap team, these are the people that are going to make this happen, right? It's not just you. I mean, unless you have a very small company, maybe. But you need these people's expertise. So take their expertise into heart. Now, some of these people, and information security, in a lot of companies, they're the department of no, you may not. Take their no and turn that into, okay, what are you protecting us from, or what do you need to see done, and let's make sure that we follow that from the beginning, right? So in our environment, and in our organization, our bootstrap team was development operations. I'm the operations guy. Chris Kantmeyer was a development guy. Information security, that was Scott Anderson. So three of the people that founded this program were on the team immediately. And we also brought in legal and intellectual property. We actually do have separate areas of discipline for there. So that's what worked for us. Now, you might have other teams in your own organization that might matter. You know, internal audit, tools and support, maybe enterprise architecture. Just think about that kind of stuff. Who should be on the team? Because, like I said, again, these are the folks that are going to make it a success or a failure with you. And at the same time, a little pro tip that I realized this too late in the game, get an executive sponsor. You know, someone that can lend a little weight to the idea, it goes a long way. Now, that executive sponsor becomes a stakeholder as well, so if they want to see something out of it, you may have to be a dancing monkey for them, right? Do what it is that they need to see. The next one, and I think most of the people in this room would be able to do this, but articulate why the hell are we even trying to do this in the first place, right? What actually turned out to be basically a surprise for me is we didn't have anybody really opposed to doing this. When I sat down and talked with people, they didn't think contributing and participating in open source software was a bad thing. They didn't think sending patches upstream was a bad thing. They didn't think that releasing our code bases to the public was a bad thing. That just wasn't their job. So they were, you know, they're getting paid to do their job. So overcoming that simple inertia was probably our number one goal for a long time. So be able to overcome that inertia with logic and reasoning. Explain why you want to do this. Now, here are some of the things that really worked for us, and this is a big deal for us. First and foremost, who here has ever forked software because they couldn't get something upstream? And did you like maintaining that thing for the rest of your freaking life? No. So that's a really easy one to explain to, especially to folks in the infrastructure world, right? I mentioned I started in the web world. I contributed code back to the HTTP server, and we didn't want to maintain that. And it's not really core to our business anyway, so why would we, right? So that was a very easy argument to make. Another one that's really important to MasterCard, we engage in a lot of philanthropy activities. A quote from our CEO is, we do well by doing good. Guys, this is open source. This is giving back to the community. This is a definition of philanthropy. If your company, well, here, let me say this. If your company doesn't have a philanthropy objective somewhere, you shouldn't work there, probably. You know, they're not good people. No, don't quote me on that, please. So keep that in mind, right? A lot of the things that your company's doing, you can tie open source into. I mean, come on. You know, there's a project out there for everything. Another one that is really important for MasterCard, again, you know, in 2010, we took off this, you know, hat of being a, you know, financial services company, and really embraced this whole idea of, yeah, we're a technology company. Well, we want a seat at the global table. We want our engineers to be out there contributing to things that are changing industries. Well, what better way to do that than a foundation-backed open source project? So by giving engineers that seat at the table, by getting our company name out there, it's free, quote-unquote, marketing. At the same time, we're also influencing these different projects to work in better ways. Y'all may not know this, but MasterCard takes security pretty seriously, and a lot of open source projects don't necessarily do the best security. So, Tomcat's fine, don't worry. So, we do contribute back stuff that is related to security, a lot. I mean, you know, they're just, sometimes there's a lot of gaps. Another one that's really important, you come at this from a human resources angle. We very much care about growing our people, right? I mean, I started at MasterCard the day after I graduated, still there. We like to invest and grow our people. This is a great way to do that. By letting them contribute, they get their name out there. You know, GitHub, believe it or not, it's part of your resume. Your contributions out in the public, those show up on your resume. That they are your, you know, testimonials, I guess, to your own work. So why would we not consider that when trying to open up an open source program? And then the worst reason of all is it's free, right? I mean, that really isn't a very good reason, but for some reason it works on some people. So I still kind of use that on there. It's free software. It doesn't really cost anything. If you fork it and then you start maintaining it locally, then it starts costing you things. So just, you know, do the free thing. So those are some of the things that just kind of work for us. And again, I mentioned your bootstrap team. The whole team should be able to articulate all of these reasons, right? These are your evangelists. You can't be, at least with a company like MasterCard, you can't be there all the time to speak to all 10,000 employees. So spread the load. Get your team engaged in this sort of activity. A simple tip is check all of your corporate objectives. Check your business unit's objectives. What are things that are going on in your company that you can say, oh, yeah, you know, we really have this desire to do well by doing good. We are doing everything we can to help the underbanked. Hey, Mr. Executive Guy, Apache Finarak looks pretty neat these days. What do you say we participate in that project in some way, right? Those are some of the things that you can take advantage of. Not take advantage of, just leverage the fact that your company's already moving in this direction and have a move in this direction too. Show of hands, who has a process or two at work? Yeah? When we were born, we came from banks. And if there was not a process, then whatever that thing was just simply did not exist. You must genuflect when you say the word the process. So for MasterCard, it was really damn important for us to establish and outline a process with our stakeholders, right? Make sure that we're incorporating all of the things that legal needed to see, intellectual property needed to see, our developers needed to see, that kind of stuff. So one of the first things, and I can't overstate this enough, is you have to have some sort of an open source collaborative environment already working within your organization, because you don't want to, for the first time, contribute externally and be cutting your teeth figuring out how you're supposed to interact with developers, right? So in usually the terms these days, inner source, right? Does anyone not run an inner source type program? Does anybody still hide their code bases from each other even within the company? Okay, so that's a really important obstacle to overcome, because if that's how you operate... Yeah, I mean, this is something that we had to tackle first. We had to get folks internally familiar with this concept of sharing code, of being open, being collaborative. And once folks were familiar with that internally, It was just a natural extension to say, oh yeah, we'll do it on GitHub too. All right, cool, right? So we kind of made fools out of ourselves internally because we didn't know how to collaborate great. But once we flexed that muscle, once we got used to it, it worked out well. So that's the internal part. The next external part is you have to figure out how you're going to interact with the public. Your marketing team may really want to talk to you about this, right? Because you are interacting with the public. You are delivering a message, whether you intend to or not. So you'll have to worry about that sort of stuff. So for me, establishing the process, it's documented, but it was important for us to make it as lightweight as possible. I swear every time I fill out a form or submit a ticket, I die a little bit more inside. So I didn't want to actually do that to anybody. So we kind of laid this out to be as lightweight as possible. We, on the Bootstrap team, on the open source program team, we took on a little bit more work. So our customers, the developers in the organization, the people that want to contribute to open source software, we took on a little more burden so they could just do what they want to do. You know, it's kind of like what we do here at the foundation, right? The foundation does stuff so the developers can develop and they don't have to worry about brand and trademarks and infra and all of that stuff. So as you work through that process, as you figure out, you have to figure out how people are going to engage internally and externally and all of that stuff. Just be thorough as you work through this. Have your stakeholders present as you work through the process. In our case, legal really wanted to be involved for a while. Intellectual property really wanted to be involved for a while. Once they realized that we knew what we were doing and we were guiding people along, you know, a pretty decent and sane path, they disengaged a bit, right? They stepped back and they said, cool, looks good. You guys are actually not going to set the place on fire. Have fun, keep playing with the matches. What was the pro tip? Oh yeah, make the process easy as possible. Kind of touched on that. So we actually just do simple email-based. You know, I would like to participate on this open source team in GitHub. Can you please add me? Do you know what open source is? Are you not going to make a fool of us? Do you know how to submit a pull request? After we do a little bit of vetting of those folks, then off you go, right? This is a good step. Pick a license that you like. Because I assume everyone here has some sort of inkling about the complexities of open source licenses. It can be hard. Now imagine you're a developer, you need to, you know, crank some feature out, you're contributing in your own spare time to an open source project, or you're creating an open source project, and again, it's a spare time type of thing, it's not your day job. It's a cognitive exercise to go through all of the licenses out there and figure out which license is going to work and which one makes the most sense for you.
Just a quick clarifying question.
Yes.
When you're talking about doing your work on GitHub,
yes.
Were you saying that you were doing your organizational work on GitHub, or do you mean that you were putting software projects that were internal to MasterCard, in your case, up on GitHub?
So the question is, are we doing our organizational work on GitHub, or are we just opening projects up on GitHub? And the answer is both, right? We contribute upstream all the time. We have very few projects that are just open and out there on GitHub, but they do exist. Most of our development still happens inside the firewall. Actually, all of our serious development happens inside of the firewall, but that's the beauty of Git. I just change which remote I'm pushing to, and I can send it to the outside if I need to.
Okay, but in general, I mean, if you're talking about working with upstream project, your license is their license.
Yes. Oh yeah. So when you're contributing back, don't be that guy and try to contribute back under a different license. Nobody likes that guy. No, this is for projects that we are opening up, and we picked the Apache 2 license because, spoiler alert, I like Apache. But there's actually a couple of unique things about the Apache license that we really like. One of them is the fact that it's provides a patent grant. You know, we have patent trolls out there. That's the reality. People get nervous about taking software and running it because they don't want to get sued by someone who owns a process patent. Another thing we liked about the Apache 2 license is it explicitly states in the license that if you don't say otherwise, your contribution coming back is licensed under Apache 2 as well, which is pretty unique. And then finally, you know, it's a permissive license. We like that. You know, it's business friendly. We do a thing or two in business. So that's one of the reasons we chose there. I don't think I need to belabor the importance of choosing a license to this group, so I won't dig too into it. There is something that you do need to figure out, and this will likely be with your legal team, is whether or not you require a CLA. So in our case, since most of the projects that we've opened up are simple and small, we do not request the CLA, right? If you're contributing this code, the Apache license says you're doing it, you know, of your own volition and all of that stuff. So we generally don't require a CLA. Actually, we do not require a CLA. That's our take on the landscape. It very well may differ within your company. So we're a bunch of engineers and developers. The next thing we're going to do is our favorite thing. We're going to document, right? We all love writing the manual, yeah? Well, it's got to happen. Like I mentioned earlier, even if you have a large bootstrap team or a lot of really passionate people that are able to move mountains, that only scales so far. Let's say you are a global company. How are you going to get that information out to everyone? So we documented. We documented all sorts of stuff. The most important thing to remember is, you know, documenting exactly why you're doing this. You should be able to point at any time to the HR person and say, this is what this program is doing to contribute to your objectives in human resources. We are growing people, we're letting them engage in the industry, so on and so forth. The other thing, and this is unique, well, probably not unique to MasterCard, but again, very important for MasterCard. If the process is not documented and made clear, then it doesn't exist and we can all just go home and forget about it. What's interesting is we accidentally formed some communities without even realizing it. We had documented the procedure. We had pointed people to the documentation here, there, every now and again. And what we actually found out is people came to us third hand, us on the open source program team, and said, Joe went through the program and he shared this documentation and he said it was cool and I want to get involved too. So we weren't even out there evangelizing. It was our customers, right? Our fellow developers saying, this is good stuff. Accidental community. I like that. This was an interesting one. As part of my role, I do travel from time to time to different offices, and I always set time aside to give a presentation to that remote office about this program. So people knew that it even existed, for one, and then for two, to get more folks to participate. So that's the quick tip for this particular slide. If you have that opportunity, it doesn't usually cost a lot to, you know, grab a conference room and send an invite out to that office and say, come on, let's just talk about this thing. So take the show on the road. In fact, depending on your executive sponsor and what they do, you may be able to leverage some of their weight or their say-so in order to make that happen. So at this point, you did it. The champions in this room have succeeded. We can claim victory, but our work is not over. You have to keep it going, right? It's a program, whether it be somebody's full-time job or not. Spoiler alert, we're not there yet. We are still doing this in our own spare time. It's very much my intention within the next, I don't know, whenever I can find some spare time to actually pitch this to become a full-time job for someone. But you have to keep growing this program. You have to keep everything alive and you know, deal with the care and feeding of it. So I mentioned earlier, after we got into this maintenance mode, intellectual property kind of took a step back and said, hey, you guys got it. If you need anything at all, reach out, but I'm not going to join the meetings anymore. Take care. So now's a good time, after you've gotten the program up and running, to reevaluate your team, your core team, and say, do we have the right representation for this phase of the life cycle? Do we need to bring on enterprise architecture now? Or do we need to, I don't know, bring on some more evangelists? For us, what we ended up doing, we actually did add multiple evangelists to the group. And this was because we took the show on the road. We were in our Dublin, Ireland office and just, you know, gave a quick presentation. Here's what we do. Here's why we do it. It's cool. It's fun. You want to do it. We want you to participate. And half a dozen people reach out and say, I want to help carry this burden. How can I help? Well, great. Let me show you. So we did this. And, you know, it also helps to spread the load. You know, this was a process that I'd say took about 3 years, all said and done. Again, it was a spare time type of thing. So bringing other folks in helps to kind of make that a little bit easier. Oh, yeah, and evangelists. That's great. We know a thing or two about evangelization in the open source world, right? I can't stress, I don't know where it went, but I can't stress the benefits of that accidental community being formed. That was incredible. It came at no cost to those of us trying to push the program. And I don't know, for me, it means a lot more when my friend tells me that, hey, you would like doing this, Daniel. Why don't you try this out? So that was kind of neat. So that's what we did. Any questions there? We good? I haven't noticed anybody fall asleep yet, so yet. Thanks. You're a good friend. I do want to talk about a couple of potential gotchas, some things that we did stumble on, some things that we have not stumbled on, but I've heard, I've given this talk elsewhere, I've heard some feedback like, hey, how did you guys deal with this? And I'd say, well, we didn't have to at all. What are you talking about? And then they explain it. I'm like, that sounds terrible. I should warn people. So that's what we're going to try to discuss here. You know, one of the first things that kind of popped up for us, and it wasn't a big deal, but every now and again, someone might say, why are you using Apache 2 license? I like the WTFPL. Or, you know, we like GPL. Why can't we use GPL? And generally speaking, every time somebody has come up and asked that question, it's just been a very simple explanation. Here are the reasons why we like this license. Here are the things that are attractive to us about it. What makes you interested in the WTFPL, for example? Has anyone read that license? It's pretty sweet. generally speaking, folks usually don't push too hard after they hear a well-thought-out, reasoned explanation. It's something that never really materialized into the typical, I wouldn't say typical, but the potential rabid firefight that may exist between the open source community about licenses. It wasn't really a big deal. I will point out, though, you do have to worry about copyright. And I actually tossed a link, I think either in this slide or towards the end of the presentation, the Creative Commons Zero license justification and reasoning is a really good read. Yeah?
So what do you say when somebody, an executive says, this WTFPL is pretty cool, why don't we just do that? I mean, we're giving this away anyway.
Yeah, so we've actually had a case. So the question was, why? What do you do when an executive or somebody comes along and says, just use the WTFPL? We had a case, actually, where we effectively wanted to put some code in the public domain. But this is what got me to the Creative Commons license and discussion around CC0. It's actually pretty hard to completely disavow copyright and just let go of something forever. But what do we do in a case where somebody says, just use this? We generally don't have that problem. You know, usually those types of decisions are deferred to the folks that are closest to them. So I won't say that executives don't make decisions on our behalf, but most of the time when we can articulate, look, this is why Apache 2 makes sense for us, they get it. And an important thing I forgot to mention about the license when you pick one is pick a well-known license. Because if you pick an obscure license, you're going to get all sorts of really weird questions about it. So I think that helped a lot. I don't know if that really answered the question, but for us, usually a reasonable explanation of why we will not do what you ask makes sense. And there have been times where we've released under a different license too, because you know it was a conversation rather than an edict or a requirement.
I find a lot of times executives say it, and actually really do mean consider.
Sure.
Look, we'll look into that. Is the answer?
Right? Yeah. Yeah, what's another one is, and I actually put this into the pro tip, you may potentially leverage your team for input there. If an executive says, I like WTFPL, you should use that. And the legal guy says, no. Legal generally trumps everyone. Legal and security, at least for us, you know, if you're going to break the law or if you're going to get us compromised, nope, end of conversation. So. Yeah, involve your team for that kind of input. Yeah, is anybody else same kind of boat? Everybody cool with being legal and not breaking the law? This next one, this is an interesting one. There will be errors, right? And this is really important to keep in mind. There are going to be errors in your young open source program, and if you do have opposition to your program, someone is going to point to that error and say, see, I told you this was a bad idea. Be ready for those errors. Now, the way we handle these situations, and you know, what does that error look like? Almost always it's committing code that should not have been committed, right? We have a server name committed as a string argument inside of something. Oops, we just said something about our internal network. You may, I don't know, embed keys or something inside. Basically, be prepared for those scenarios. What do you do? Well, the first thing that you guys have to remember, and I'm, again, probably preaching to the choir here, you can't take anything back once it goes out there. So that data that you didn't want to get out, it's out. Treat it as a breach. So respond accordingly. I assume everyone has some sort of a procedure in case there is a data breach. Most folks do. You should have one if you don't. Execute those procedures. We also handle this by just being accountable and stepping up when something comes up. So we actually had a situation where, this was kind of funny. We deal a lot with encryption code. And a good way to test encryption code is to encrypt things and decrypt it and make sure that what went in is the same thing that went out after, you know, both transformations. To do that sort of encryption, you generally need a key. So a lot of our test cases, we randomly generated a key and stuck a key inside of the test case. So someone, we did a scan of our open source GitHub repo, and someone said, you guys are nuts. This open source thing's terrible. You're publishing keys on the public internet. You can't do that. Keys are very sensitive. They're very important. Calm down. No problem. I'll take a look at it. I'll get a hold of the team that's responsible for that GitHub repo. 5 minutes after looking at it, I realized that this is a slight overreaction. But we use that sort of delegation in our model. So everybody knows from security, legal, operations, development, whatever, that they can come to the team and say, hey, I have this concern. And they know we will take the concern, we will act on it, and then get with the right people to resolve it. So in this case, it was just as simple as explaining, that's actually not a problem, it's cool, let me tell you why. And then we've had other cases where We would have to reach out to the team that actually owns that project or that repository on GitHub. And I would say, you know what, I can't fix that for you, but I know Chris, he's actually the person responsible for that repository and the contents. So let's work together. I'll chat with Chris, and I'll get back to you in a day or two. How's that sound? And that's fine. There's a process. Oh, yeah. Distributed version control has history. You can't uncommit something, ever. It's out there. This was actually a fun one. Someone asked, who the heck is that in our commit history? That's not a MasterCard person. How did they get here? I said, that's good. That means we've accepted a contribution from the community. Like, but I don't expect that. This is a chance to actually have that conversation and explain why we're doing these sorts of things. So every now and again, we'll get situations where someone might ask about an ID that we don't recognize. In our case, we use personal accounts for GitHub. Now, this is a very touchy topic. It depends on the company that you're working for, which way you go. I can't give you a guaranteed answer. In our case, we want to promote the individual. We want to let people contribute and work through MasterCard's project on GitHub with their own personal ID. So that's how we do it. We maintain a little application that allows people to say, my name is Daniel Ruggieri. I am D. Ruggieri on GitHub. And now I have an association inside the firewall to the outside of the firewall. I know who is in our organization, and I can scrape and, you know, pull individuals out with an automated tool that will remove users that should not be there. Let's say they moved on to another group, they no longer work on that code, or they won the lottery and they now no longer work for us. We have automated systems that will just pull that account out for us. This is a really big one. If you're choosing to work with GitHub or on GitHub, whether you use a corporate ID or an individual ID is a big decision, and I've seen a couple of cases of companies that have gone both ways. They've flip-flopped. They said, we thought this was the right way for us. We ended up changing it, and here's why. That's actually a whole slide just about that. One of the examples that came up between the personal versus a business GitHub account. It was a company I was talking to. They were based in Germany, and the European labor laws are such that if you are working, even in your own spare time, on something that you're working on for work, the laws could be interpreted to say that that person must be compensated for that time. Generally, we don't have that too much in the States. We will overwork our people into the ground if we need to, but that's a very relevant thing. So what they actually had to do in their particular company is you create a personal account, fine. You create a business account, and you may no longer participate as terms of your employment in that open source project if it touches what you do at work. Because of the labor laws, it really complicated things for them. Difficult situation, and that was an example that necessitated the need for separate IDs. So this could go either way. Think about it really hard. You'll choose one. It'll probably be wrong. You can course correct later. So I think that's all I have. Merle tells me I have a little less than 5 minutes. I do want to toss out some links. The To-Do group, if you guys haven't come across them, this is a division, a sub-project of the Linux Foundation. These are folks that do this for a living, create open source programs, and they have some really great guides on how you can get started. This was just a primer. This is, you know, nothing compared to what they've already put together. These are people that are passionate about it, so they have really great information. There's also no good license compatibility matrix, but this is one of the least, not worst, of them out there. Nobody really, I mean, it's complicated, right, when you're tracking down all the different licenses. So I wanted to toss that one out there. The rest kind of are self-explanatory. This one's interesting. I put an asterisk Look, they gave me a laser, by the way. That's hilarious. I wanted to toss an asterisk on there. The Department of Defense for the United States actually has a very comprehensive frequently asked questions page about open source software. What it is, why does it matter, is it going to compromise our national security? No, it's not. It's actually very, very good read. It's very thorough. The reason there's an asterisk on there is that there are a couple of things I don't necessarily agree with, but by and large, they get it right, and you can use this information to form your own frequently asked questions within your firewall for your own company. And then finally, y'all are going to go teach a class. It's actually super easy. The hard part is building a curriculum. You just reach out to a local university and say, hey, I want to do this. So they tend to actually welcome that sort of thing. So everybody do that. There's a link. And then you can also grab this presentation as well. So I'm the last thing between y'all and beer, right? Kind of a dangerous spot to be. Yeah, right here?
Yeah, but do I have to type that, or is it going to be on Apache?
You know what? I don't think I've sent it into the conference organizers. I should do that. I will send it in. Yeah. I don't even tweet. I don't. I it's embarrassing. What's up?
Did you find that after going through this process with some of your folks internally who had no previous open source experience, just going through the motions of I'm going to do a pull request, or not even a pull request, I'm going to do a commit on GitHub against our own stuff, or if they're externally and they're forking your own repo, et cetera, just going through those motions and understanding and learning about open source, has that gotten them involved in other communities outside of MasterCard?
So that's actually a really interesting question. We found people coming out of the woodwork that have been participating in communities already that we just didn't know about. I don't mean to say that they were they were doing it at MasterCard, but there. I mean, a lot of us do this in our own spare time because we love it and because we're passionate about it. So we found those people very quickly when we said, hey, we want to do an open source program. They're like, yes, please do. So we found a lot of those folks. There are also closet contributors, as I like to call it. In the old days, 2007 or so, we had no idea how to participate in open source software. So I was instructed to send my patches to HTTPD just through my personal account and to do it after business hours so nobody will think that MasterCard was involved. Because we didn't have a process. We didn't have an official opinion on it, so we were allowed to contribute, just it wasn't done in an official capacity. So, closet contributors. Bob, what's up?
Did you build anything in your process that you can talk a little bit about your folks contributing things that should have made it out? Do you have anything built into the process about somebody from another company contributing things that they should
did we build anything into our process to protect us from?
Well, so that's one of the reasons a lot of places have a CLA, have to sign something to say that I am certifying that this is, I am in my right to contribute this to you.
Mm-hmm.
You said you did not have a CLA.
Right.
So I'm just wondering if there's some other way you were handling that.
Yeah, so there are a couple of schools of thought here. There's three, I would say. One would say, just give me a CLA. And you have to ask yourself if you're ready to deal with that too,
yeah.
Right? I mean, how many CLAs do you have to deal with, Craig? I mean, it's, is your legal department ready for that? Another train of thought, and this was interesting, I think it's Chef. Chef, the company that makes Chef the product. They do their contributions by asking for the, what's it called? It's in Git. When you do a commit, you can add a... there's a flag that you can add that basically does that same attestation. It's how the Linux kernel is also done. You don't send in your CLAs that way. what is it called? The sign-off, the Git sign-off. They use that as their CLA. And then the third vein of thought, which is where we are right now, is you don't like walk into a room and accidentally commit code and open a pull request. You know, it was a deliberate act for you to open that pull request to commit that code. So, you know, the additional sign-off and the additional CLA, you're basically asserting that you have the right to do this by the fact that you're doing it. Plus, it's not super sticky for us right now. Those projects that are out there are, a lot of them are like SDK clients for the APIs we run. So, you know, we're not shipping any of this code. We're not, you know, well, we are shipping it, but it's not a super weird, super touchy style of code to deal with. So for us, yeah, you don't accidentally commit and contribute code. Has anyone done that? Did you like wake up at 3 a.m. and be like, oh, I did it again. I committed and did a pull request in my sleep. No? All right. You've seen my stuff, haven't you? Yeah. Well, I don't want to keep you guys. I'm a little bit over, but you know, this is ApacheCon, community over code. Find me anytime if you want to talk about this. I'm also more than happy to spend my spare time and do a call with your company if it would help. Right? Take advantage of it. You know, this is a good success story to be able to say that we pulled this off. And there have been other companies that said, well, if they did it, then we can do it too. Hey, Daniel, will you come talk to our guys in security? Yes, I will. I really care that much about it. So, awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing everybody elsewhere at the conference, and I thank you so much for your time.